do to get help in this class is there's going to be a study group formed, a CPL study group. They'll meet in Lattimore 106 Wednesdays 5 to 6. It'll be led by Brad Ashcroft, and we have Brad here in living color. So you want to say a few words?
Yeah, basically, this is for the class. It's not required. It's voluntary. So if you'd like to join at any point of the class, there's an email. Or you can just stop in. It's in Lattimore 106 Wednesdays 5 to 6 every week. Basically, it's just an extra resource if anyone, you really want to study help, but really anything, no matter where you're standing in the class, if you just want to come in, stop by, work on some homework. We'll probably be going over some problems from G and Coley just to do some extra practice, and I guess that's it. Any questions? All right, so yeah, just send me an email if you want to join. We're looking to have about 10 to 12 people that are continuously coming here every week, so we can kind of establish a kind of a core group. So I guess that's it. Maybe I'll see some of you. Thanks.
All right, great. Thanks, Brad. All right, so there's a resource in addition to the other things that we're setting up in terms of the class. So we have TA office hours, so five of those scattered through the week. In addition to that, the Society of Physics students, physics majors, they tend to congregate in the Physics and Astronomy Library up on the third floor of Bausch & Lomb, which, if you haven't noticed, they come in a quad level, the second level, so it's up one floor. And they have two office hours every day of the week, for Saturday and Sunday. So, and in fact, I think these students are pretty well versed on the kinds of stuff that you're doing, and they do actually enjoy it helping, so take advantage of that. Before we get going, I sort of want to see if we can at least make the system work here. So this is the type of clicker that is supposed to be talking in the system. You may have something else. I don't know if it will talk to the system or not, but most of you should have this. And these are the instructions that came with it. So you want to turn it on. It's going to search. Wait till it shows join. And then I'm going to show you a display, which I can't do simultaneously with this because it's coming off the other computer. But it will basically give you a number of one. And so I think you look for the numeric, press the one and see if that, I mean, we'll see if you actually join the class then.
Because your system, your device has to be speaking to the electronic piece that's hooked to the PC. So some of you are joining.
If you, as you join, you'll see this number in front of you. For fun, I mean, I didn't want to do one of these right at the start of class, but let's just set up one of these. So it's now expecting input. It says letters, four choices. So try clicking A, B, C, or D on your thing. Okay, so this indicates some of you are actually talking to it, so that's good. We got the big countdown. Well, there we go. So apparently. Some bees. We have very few C's in this class. Okay, so it seems to work. So that's good. So now we can maybe start using it. All right, so last time we started to move from single-dimensional motion to multi-dimensional motion. And the thing is, in single-dimensional motion, numbers along with algebraic signs is sufficient to do those problems. The number gives you magnitude of velocity or the position or the speed or whatever. And the sign, the algebraic sign, tells you which way you need that you're going. So that's sufficient information. But if we go three dimensions, things are much more complicated. You can't just do it simply with numbers and signs. So we are going to use a different mathematical beast. And it's called a vector, okay? And if you've not done much with vectors before, they're going to seem very strange to you. And in fact, early on, I think it's fair to say you will wonder why we are making life complicated with these vectors, because it will seem as if you can sort of pull things together without it. It turns out that as we get more complex, you really can't. And math turns out to be extremely useful for describing reality. And amazingly, it works extremely well. And there will be one example, in fact, when we study the physics that was behind that spinning bicycle wheel I did the first day. If you recall that, we spun up the wheel. When it wasn't spinning, it would just fall. But when we had the wheel spinning and I let go on one side, it didn't fall. It went sideways. Okay? And when we get to that point of the semester, I'm going to show you the mathematics that tells you exactly what it's going to do. Okay? And you will see it, you'll believe everything up to that point, and then you'll look at the equation and you'll realize, you know, then we're going to say, this is what it says is going to happen. And then you're going to see this happen exactly like the math says, and your mind is still going to be like, no way. So it turns out that mathematics is very powerful in terms of allowing us to understand some aspects of the universe that our mind really isn't capable of grasping. So that's part of the power of mathematics, and it's part of why we have to go into vectors. So just be patient, but don't be too patient. You really do want to get this stuff down, because we will be using it out the wazoo, okay? So you will have to be very good at it. So you can sort of think of this as almost a different type of mathematics. We now are going to start doing, I have to show you the rules. What do I mean when I say it's a vector? What are the algebraic rules for dealing with vectors, and how does it differ from the kinds of stuff you're used to? So generally speaking, you can think of a vector as an arrow. And so often I'll talk about x, y, and z axes. And think of an arrow that has a length
and it points in some arbitrary direction in space. That's what I've tried to draw here. So you can visualize a vector basically like this. A vector really has two components. One is a direction and the other is a magnitude. So the direction really is the direction the arrow points. The magnitude is the length of the arrow. Okay, and you can imagine if you want to think about how the arrow works, we put its tail here at the origin, and we define its head to be at some point in three space, which we define by going out so far in x, up so far in y, and out this way so far in z. So those three numbers are sufficient to give me that point in three space where the head of the arrow lies, and that can give me both direction and magnitude for this thing. So that is sufficient to define this D. Alright? So a vector consists of three numbers. So last time we talked a little bit about it. If I have a vector, wherever it is, I can define it according to some coordinate system like I just did. I can now take that vector, and like it's an arrow, literally, I can translate it. I can move it around, okay? But its magnitude and its direction stays fixed. And I put it here. This vector is exactly equivalent to the one I started with. Okay? Because it is defined only by its direction and magnitude. It doesn't matter where I put it. So you can take vectors and move them around in problems as you need to. So that's what I mean by this. That vector is equivalent to that vector is equivalent to that vector. Alright? They're the same thing. Just like the number one is always number one, whether I say it in here or I say it in Bausch-Lomb. Okay? It's still one. The negative of a vector is exactly like the vector, except it's pointing in the opposite direction. By definition. Okay? A constant times a vector, that is a number times a vector, before I go to that, I wanted to find something different. Sorry. Let's say we have a vector. We usually use letters to signify vectors, but we always put a little arrow over them. So let's suppose that we have some vector A, okay? If we want to project out simply the magnitude of A, so all I'm doing is measuring the length of this arrow in whatever units you're using, and I want that number, then you can do that by, we symbolize that by putting the absolute value sign. I messed up my arrow. Okay, around the vector. This is defined to be the magnitude of the vector. You can get something that basically gives you the direction by defining something as the unit vector. This is defined as the vector itself divided by its magnitude. Now, that may seem a bit ridiculous, but very often what you want is something that really gives you the direction of the vector, but its magnitude doesn't multiply anything. So you do that by dividing the magnitude out, which is what we're doing here. Okay? And we call it the unit vector in the A direction, if you want, here. Maintaining the important philosophy that we want to use as much language and symbology as we can to make this as opaque as possible, we take this very quantity and we give it a different symbol, which is A with this symbol on top of it. And we would call that A hat. Okay? So you might call it unit vector in the A direction or A hat. So these are basically the two ways to decompose a vector, in a sense. One is to pull out the magnitude, the other is to sort of pull out the direction by dividing the magnitude out. Okay? There are lots of ways to symbolize vectors. So we can say A like that. I could give it three numbers. So the component of A in the X direction, the component of A in the Y direction, the component of A in the Z direction. If we go up to this, if we call this vector A, for example, then remember that we define A basically by putting a point here in three space. When we put that point there, it is given by the three coordinates, x, y, and z for it, right? So you go so far out in x, so far out in z, and that far up in y. So this piece is a number. It's the x component of A, we're going to call it. Similarly, this piece is the Z component of A, and this piece is the, never mind, I'll do that. This piece is the Y component of A, okay? Those are just numbers, okay? They may be symbols in your problem or whatever, because you really don't ever want to be putting numbers into this stuff until the end, and we're going to come to that a lot. But these are not vectors, they are numbers. Together, the three of them define the vector A. So I can actually write the vector A in terms of these three pieces. Or I could write it as the vector A. Never mind. We're going to come back to this because I want to write it, but I want to do something else first. Okay, so plus others. that we'll come to. All right, so before we get to the others, I want to talk a moment about vector addition. So recall that last time we had a student swimming across a river, and the river was going this way, right? So we were imagining that we had two velocities sort of adding together. And you can think of a velocity as a vector because it has a magnitude and a direction. In this case, one of them has a magnitude and a direction this way. The other has a magnitude and a direction that way. Okay? If this is small, just a little bit, or if it's zero, I just swim straight across. So the sum of them is just this one. If this is a little bit, now I swim, but I go a little bit this way. So the vector that represents the sum of the two is something that's sort of like that. Okay? If this is big, and this is not so big, now I'm swimming much more like this to get across. So the vector that would represent my net velocity would be something like that. So we get sort of this weirdness where when we add them together, we're sort of superimposing one with the other and asking what does it turn into, in a sense. So vectorially, there's a new word for you. What that means is if I start, let's look at it graphically. You take, let's suppose that we have vector A, which is something like this. And let's say we want to add to it vector B, which is something like that. Okay? This is equal to some new vector C, and I don't know what it is. So the way to do this graphically, is you take vector A, you take the first one, and then you take the second one, and you basically take the tail of the second one and put it at the head of the first one. So this is still vector A, this is still vector B. And now the sum of these two vectors, you take a vector that goes from the start of A to the head of B. And this is A plus B. Okay? So C is actually that vector. And now I hope it'll make a little sense. If I take this arm and I take this arm, if I could remove my arm at the shoulder and move it to here, then I'd have that arm sticking out like that. And then I take an arrow that goes from here to the tip of my fingers, and that arrow represents the direction I go as I come across the river. Okay? We also call this, because you may see it written that way, this is also called the resultant of the vector addition. So that's how vector addition is done. Note that A plus B is equal to B plus A. I could take this vector first. So let's do it. Here's B. And now I add to it A. And then I get this vector, which is B plus A. Okay? And you end up with the same thing. So it's like regular numbers that way. 5 plus 3 is the same as 3 plus 5. You may think that sounds really stupid, but there are mathematical... You can create a mathematics where that's not true, actually. So you have to actually realize that. Alright, so let's go back to this. Remember where we were looking at the symbology of how to symbolize vectors. So, if you think about this, there's also no end to how many vectors you can add together. So if we take this whole thing, and I get rid of this for a moment. Alright, so we start again with our vector A. You can imagine that vector being made up of a sum of three separate vectors, one of which is a vector that goes along the x-axis, which I'm going to call AX vector. One is a vector that goes along the y-axis, a y vector, and note that I'm now adding them together. I have put the tail of the second one at the head of the first one, okay? And now that would yield, if I just added those together, a vector that goes from here to there, which if you think about it, is exactly the projection of this vector down into this plane, right? If I took a light and I had it way up there and I shone it straight down, I would end up with a shadow that runs right here. So I'm projecting out that component. But instead of doing that, now I'm actually going to add a third vector to it, starting at this point and going up to the tip of vector A. And this is a z vector. So it is a vector along the z direction, which has magnitude a sub z, where a sub z, again, was the z component of that a vector. Right? So these are not all independent, right? If I have the vector a, all this stuff is defined. But you can think of a here as the sum of these three vectors. So another way to write a is to say that a is equal to ax plus ay plus az. Okay? Or I could say that a is equal to the magnitude of ax, or just ax, in the x direction, which I could symbolize by x hat, which is really is a magnitude of 1 that gives you the x direction. So I have the magnitude of ax here multiplied by a magnitude of 1, and it's in the ax direction. So this and that are equivalent. I can rewrite that as plus ay y hat plus az z hat. Fun, huh? Okay, again, this is probably a touch too transparent for you to truly be able to disguise what you're trying to do. So we have a special code. I think at some point I'll hand out the special physics decoder ring that you need for these kinds of things. Often the unit vector in the x hat direction we call I hat. Oops, sorry. And
The unit vector in the y direction we often call j hat, and the unit vector in the z direction we often call k hat. So another way to write this is equal to A, the x component of A in the I hat direction, plus the y component of A in the j hat direction. Plus the z component of A in the k hat direction. Are you ready to scream yet? I have to show you all these things because you will see them used interchangeably all over the place, including in my problems and my lecture notes, because I will tend to try to do the x hats, y hats, and z hats, but you'll see I hats, j hats, and k hats. So this is sort of your decoder training, just so you know what we mean. I guess I have one other little, couple other little things I want to show you. A constant of some sort times a vector is equal to a vector with the magnitude, which is the magnitude of that vector times the constant in the same direction as A. So a way to think about that is if I have a vector here, which I'll call vector D, okay? And I want to look at 10 times D, then what I end up with is this vector but now it's I have to do this. Never mind, what I'm trying to do here isn't going to work, so I'll do it this way. It's the same vector, but now it's 10 times longer. Okay, it's in the same direction, but now it's 10 times longer. It is a new vector. So that's how a vector gets multiplied by a constant. Suppose that, just so we have specificity, okay, so let's say that I have vector A here, and let's say I have vector B here, what is the direction of A minus B? What do you think?
Then if the original vector is going to the left, then subtracting it means you're going to the right.
Right, so minus B would be going to the right, and then you add them together to get A minus B. So you can think of this as A plus minus B, right? Minus B is opposite in direction, so same magnitude. So we have A And now we have to add minus B. Oh, but I added it in the wrong place, so I want to take... So we start with A, and then we add to it minus B, and you end up with a vector that goes like this. So this would be A minus B. Okay? So any questions on sort of this basic vector mechanics? So we haven't yet talked about multiplication, and we will. And multiplying vectors is a bit more complicated than multiplying numbers, because vectors have three components, or magnitude and direction, so how do you really multiply them? And it turns out that there are two ways to multiply them, and we're going to learn both. One's called the dot product, one's called the cross product. I'm going to wait until we get to where the physics we need demands it, because I think if I write down the definitions of how to multiply them, and I don't remember how your book does it. I don't remember if they do it in the chapter where they're introducing vectors or not. But the whole reasoning behind the two definitions of multiplication just really is hard to make any sense of it unless you have physical examples that show you why these are so useful ways, so useful in terms of how to define them. So I'm not going to bother with multiplication. We've sort of done addition and subtraction. Okay. So, any questions right now on vectors? All right. So now it turns out that in most of these problems, it is very useful, I think, to draw sketches and to use your ability to visualize things to see that your problem is making physical sense. And in that sense, this idea of graphical addition of vectors is a fairly useful sort of thing. And we may do a little bit of some exercises and problems and in the workshop maybe on graphical addition of vectors. So I do think that's a good thing mentally. In the end, though, you will almost never really use that, because physics is a quantitative science, so we actually have to learn how to add these things together in a quantitative way. So now what I'd like to do is to look at how to do analytical addition of vectors. So let me just go to two dimensions for the moment. So we have an x and y axis. And let's imagine that I have some vector in an arbitrary direction. Let me just choose it like this. So I have vector A. Okay? And you know that vector A, if I'm only in two dimensions, this vector is defined by two numbers. I don't need the three if I limit myself to two numbers. Or if you're hung up on three, you say, okay, the third component is zero. So you can imagine that this vector is now made up of a vector along the x direction, which I'll call AX, and a vector along the y direction, which I'll call AY. Okay? You can, because these arrows have magnitudes, you can also look at this, and what we have is a right triangle with the magnitude of A equal to this side, the hypotenuse, the magnitude of AX here, and the magnitude of AY there. So this AX, the magnitude of AX is this side of the triangle. Well, let me rephrase that. So what we literally have is a right triangle like this, where this is the magnitude of A, the magnitude of AY, the magnitude of AX. And we know all sorts of tricks for finding magnitudes and angles and things like that when we are faced with simple magnitudes and triangles. I don't actually know what I just said. Sometimes if I'm sitting here futzing with this thing, my mouth sort of moves, and I'm not exactly sure what I said. So I don't know if that made any sense. I think what I was meaning to say was that if these are vectors, they're a little scary, and I'm not quite sure what to do with them. The minute I take this and I think of it as a triangle with three sides, you're used to that, okay? And it turns out to be very useful, because this angle is the same as that angle. And that contains direction information, right? This side and that side and that side, they're all the same. So we can use our standard trigonometric relationships to sort of figure out how to go from one piece of this to the other. So you need to remember several relationships. Imagine that we have a right triangle with an angle theta here. And this is the hypotenuse. When the angle theta is here, we talk about the other sides being, this one is the far side, we call it the opposite side. So I call it OPP. This one that forms the opening, that forms the other side of this angle, we call the adjacent side. And I hope you've all seen this before, but we define the angle sine of theta. Well, or this relationship holds true. Sine of theta is equal to the opposite over the hypotenuse. That is the magnitude, the length of this side over the length of the hypotenuse is equal to sine theta. You've all seen that before, I hope. If you haven't, you want to go and figure it out. Cosine of the angle is equal to the adjacent side over the hypotenuse, and the tangent of the angle is equal to the opposite side over the adjacent side in terms of magnitude. Okay? So we want to use these. So what that means, if we look at our drawing here, we're going to call this angle theta. And look how important that is, because that really defines the direction of this. I mean, how do I say the direction of a vector? Well, this one I could say it makes an angle theta with the x-axis, the positive x-axis, right? Going into the positive y direction. Or it's an angle theta rotating counterclockwise from the positive x-axis. That specifies very clearly the direction of this vector, okay? And the magnitude then is equal to the sum of the magnitudes of the other two sides. So the magnitude of A squared is equal to the magnitude of AX squared plus the magnitude of AY squared. So that's just the Pythagorean theorem. Sine of theta
is equal to the magnitude of the opposite side over the magnitude of the hypotenuse. So that would be the magnitude of AY over the magnitude of A. Cosine of theta is equal to the magnitude of AX over the magnitude of A. Okay? And just for completeness, the tangent of theta is equal to the magnitude of AY over the magnitude of AX. So these are the relationships that you use to sort of figure out this kind of thing. Now, you may wonder why I'm doing this. And the reason is we sort of know how to deal with things along lines, right? One dimension. That's easy. The problem with this is it's multiple dimensions. So the way that we deal with multiple dimension problems is we use these relationships to take this vector and split it into its one-dimensional pieces. If all I have to deal with is AX, then I have a magnitude, and I can let the plus sign tell me it's that way instead of that way. And I'm good. I know how to deal with numbers. I can also have AY, okay, as a number and a sign. And I know how to deal with that. I get this A when I have those two at the same time. But that's what we're going to do. We're going to take complicated multidimensional motion, which is full of these awful vectors, and we're going to break each of these vectors down into the one-dimensional components. And once you're in one dimension, you're dealing with numbers. So you then deal with the numbers along each of the dimensions separately, and then you add it all back together to get the final set of vectors. So that's sort of the game, and that's why I'm dragging you through this. So I want to do one of these to give you a sense of how it works. So let's suppose that A is a vector like so. Boy, that's sort of a sick vector, sorry. If I can draw that straight. There's A. And I didn't draw it so well, but let me change it because I have a lot. I want to make that angle smaller. Since that's what I have in my notes. Okay, so this, let's say, is 20 degrees, and I'm going to call this vector A. And we're going to say that vector B is down like so. And just for completeness, and so we have specificity, I'm going to say that the magnitude of A is equal to 4 meters, and the magnitude of B is equal to 5 meters. Okay? And what I'd like to do for the problem is say that let's find the sum of A plus B, the sum of A and B. And I'm going to define that to be a vector R. Okay? So how do we do that analytically? So the way to do it is to take the vectors and decompose them into their components along the axes. Okay? B is easy because it's already along one of the axes. So that's what we want to do, and because we don't want to say that all the time, we say that we are going to resolve the vectors into components.
That's sort of the language that you'll hear used all the time. Okay? So B is easy. So B is already a long Y. The Y axis. So the magnitude of B in the Y is equal to B in the Y, which I didn't make very clear. Let this sort of be the definition. If I take a vector and I just take a piece of it, if I take away its arrow, it's another way of saying magnitude. Okay? So this is a little bit of a clearer way to write it, and I will try to do that much of the time, but you will see this very often. Okay, and these are equivalent. And this is also the magnitude of B, because B is along the Y. So that one's easy, which in this case is 5 meters. But I want you to notice that 5 meters, when we worry about the sign, is going in the negative y direction. So that's minus 5 meters when I add things together algebraically. But we'll get to that. B in the x is equal to 0. That is the component of the B vector along the x axis, right? A in the x. Let's look at A. A is a bit of a different thing. So we have A like so. We have 20 degree angle with the x-axis. So the A component in the x is this piece. And the y component is this piece. Right? So you can imagine having those two pieces. So now you have a triangle, if you want to think of it that way, where you have A magnitude, you have a y magnitude, and you have a x magnitude, and this angle is 20 degrees. Okay? So the magnitude of ax is equal to a, the magnitude of a, times the cosine of 20 degrees of theta. How do I get that? Because remember that cosine theta is equal to adjacent over hypotenuse. The hypotenuse here is A. That's the length of A. The adjacent is the length of the x side. So if I have the length of the x side over the length of A times cosine theta is equal to the length of the x side, which is what I have here. A in the y is equal to the magnitude of A times the sine of theta. Okay? And these are magnitudes only. Okay. Now what I want to do is along each of the axes, I want to add the components of the different vectors together numerically. So, if I assume that this vector R is going to be the algebraic sum of these two. Okay, we can even get a sense of what it looks like because R is equal to A plus B. Graphically, that would be something that looks a little bit like this. A is looking like that. B looks something like that. So that means that the resultant should look something like this. Okay? And if you think about that, that means when I break the resultant up into its components, it should have a negative y piece here and a negative x piece here because it has to be pointing in the direction that you can see it graphically. All right? So I have the A components and I have the B components. So let us look at just the X axis, okay? What are the components of A plus B along the X? The B component is zero, the A component is not zero, and we see it's a minus whatever the magnitude of AX is. The x component of R here turns out to be the sum of the x component of A and the sum with the x component of B. Okay? And the y component of R is going to be the y component of A summed with the y component of B. So R and the x is equal to A in the X plus B in the X. I want to convert these to numbers. So R in the X along the X-axis is equal to the magnitude of A along the X direction plus the magnitude of B along the X direction, except you also include the signs. A, the component, x component of A is actually going in the negative x direction. So when I convert that to a number, I have to pull in the minus sign. And B is in the x is zero. So this turns out R in the x magnitude, or R in the x component, is equal to minus 5 meters. Well, is it 4, I guess? 4 meters, minus 4 meters, plus zero. So that is the x component of the R vector, I guess I should say. The magnitude of Rx is equal to 4 because you take out the sign. R in the Y is equal to A in the Y plus B in the Y is the magnitude of A times the sine of 20, or it's just A in the Y. It's positive because it's going up, whereas in B, B is going down. So when you take these two pieces, take the I don't want to say this. This is AY, the magnitude of R and the Y is equal to the magnitude of AY, which is positive, minus the magnitude of BY, because that's headed in the negative direction. Yes.
Is it AX negative 1 cosine?
Yes, it's not full 4 meters. Thank you. How do I want to do this? Rx vector is equal to minus the magnitude of A times the cosine of the angle theta in the x hat direction, I guess. So this gives you the magnitude of A, of AY. This tells you the direction you're going along with the x-axis. That sort of defines its direction. So that's all I know. Thank you. Sorry about that. So R in the y is equal to A in the y. It's going up, so you have a positive sign. The magnitude of that times the sine of theta minus, turns out you just need dy. And all of this is in the y-hat direction. So this probably seems absurdly complicated. I'm just trying to go through it very slowly. And I probably should have just gone through it fast, because it's probably simpler if I do that, even if you're just watching it. But now what I have is the magnitude of, these are numbers, right? I have the magnitude of A. I know that to be 4. I know cosine of 20 degrees is whatever it is. So this is an actual number with a sign along the x direction. Here, should be the magnitude of A. The magnitude of A, again, is 4. The magnitude of B is 5. The BY is equal to the magnitude of B. So these are numbers. That's a number. So I have now a number for R sub Y. The sign tells you the direction of these things are going. So RX now is like so. We know its direction because of the sign of the algebraic number. It's going in the negative X direction. Ry is the sum of the A component here, which is going up, and the B component, which is going down. This B component is much bigger, so when I sum those two up, I get something going negative when you work out that number. So I end up with something that looks more like that. This would be Ry. And now I have the components of two sides of a vector. So I can take my triangle, which has a side Rx here and Ry here, and a magnitude of R here. The way to think, if I now take my Rx and I add to it my Ry, then I have the vector R, which is in the end what you wanted, okay? And yet we'll have some angle psi here if you want. And so if I'm given the magnitude, if I understand this geometry, I'm given the magnitude of Rx and Ry, I can now calculate the magnitude of R, which is just the square of Rx and Ry magnitude, okay? and I can find this angle, so I can tell you what the direction of R is by using then any of those trigonometric relationships. So I can say the sine of pi, for example, is equal to the opposite of the hypotenuse, so it's R sub y over the magnitude of R. So in the end, what you're after is the magnitude and the direction of this resultant vector. Boy, that was painful. That was even painful for me. Sorry about that. The truth is, you're going to be whipping this stuff off so fast, you won't be thinking about it, okay? I went through a lot of steps, and you need to drag yourself through. We're going to do a lot of problems with this so that you get used to doing this, okay? And then you're going to get to the point where you'll automatically be taking these vectors and just decomposing them, and then adding things up and then re-pulling them back together. Yeah, you have to be very specific. So if the answer to this problem is what is R, then you would have to tell me R magnitude is given by this equation or these numbers, and the angle in this case, because it's pointing down that way, you would say, and makes an angle psi with the negative x-axis going counterclockwise or something. You have to be very specific about how you define your angle. Can you guys chill? I can't hear the question. What? I think don't get hung up on that a convention like that. You just have to look at the problem and figure out what you mean by that angle, and then say explicitly what you mean. And it doesn't necessarily have to be defined with an x-axis or whatever. I want to caution you with some things, especially in the book. When you get to certain problems, for example, where you have a projectile being kicked up at some angle theta from the ground, when you do that and you look at the various components, let's say this is a velocity. When you decompose that velocity into components, you end up with a vy here and a vx here. And the vy is equal to the magnitude of v times the sine of the angle. But I want you to understand, and this I need to be very clear on, the y component is only the magnitude times the sine if I have defined this to be the angle theta. If I had defined the angle theta to be with the vertical instead of the horizontal, then that would be a cosine. And one of the points where your book is misleading, and I almost pitched the book because of this, is that when they start looking at projectile problems and carry things out, they write down like final equations with a sine theta in there. That's a special case. I might give you a different angle. So there's nothing magical about the angle. If you find yourself saying, oh, that's a horizontal component, therefore it's a sine theta, boy, you're screwed. Okay? You need to always look at the angle and go back to the sine theta is opposite over hypotenuse, cosine theta is adjacent over hypotenuse, because what's opposite and what's adjacent depends on which angle I'm taking. Okay? So you've got to go back to the start and think about it that way. I was slow today, sorry, we were going to do more. So I'm going to leave it at this very boring point and send you off to your weekend.